Good morning and welcome back to the Dante Blogs Morning Coffee Podcast, the DBMZ Radio. Hope you're having a great morning, great day, maybe a cup of coffee. And it's Monday, a bit of upbeat tempo here, and the weather is fantastic. It's going to be 10 degrees and sunny, which is kind of early spring vibes here. And we are going to have a bit of a marathon today with 15 tercets from Canto 17. And this is the part where Dante is laying out much of his own biography, especially from the exile in 1302, and then the events that followed. And this ties into that the story is set in 1300, and he's asking now his great-great-grandfather, Cacciaguida, about his future from kind of the vantage point of 1300. And we had it last time that he made this just honest question. He articulated his flame, his burning wish, as Beatrice told him that he had to do to fully get the answers he wanted and to participate in this spiritual process as well. And the last line we had was that he says that the pilgrim says, like, che saeta previsa vien più lenta. So he wants to know his future, and he feels kind of fortified to withstand the bad news, because an arrow that is expected, like previsioned, comes more slowly. So you can kind of prepare for it if you know what is coming. And then he continues here. Così disio a quella luce stessa, like this or such, or in this way, I told to this this same light che prima mi aveva parlato, that earlier had talked to me. E come volle Beatrice fu la mia voglia confessa. And as wanted, or as willed from Beatrice, like thus was my will, my wish confessed. So you can see here the tone is very pragmatic and just descriptive, but you're going to see it's emotional and non-sentimental at the same time, as we're going to see here. Ne per ambace in che le gente folle che si inviscava pria che fosse anciso l'agnel di Dio che la peccata tolle. So, and without any ambiguity, in which the foolish people blended themselves within, before we had the Lamb of the Divine who took on all our sins. So it's just referring to more of the pagan tradition, and he says, like, but now he's going to get a full clarity in the answers from his great-great-grandfather. Ma per chiare parole e con preciso latin, so, but with clear words and with precise Latin, rispose quell'amor paterno, responded this paternal love, chiuso e parvente del suo proprio riso. So this is a beautiful one. It was enclosed, like this paternal love, fatherly love, was enclosed and shining out of his true smile. His very smile. La contingenza che fuor del quaderno della vostra matera non si stende, tutta è dipinta nel cospetto eterno. So this is Cacciaguida starting to talk, and he says then that the contingencies that outside of the notebook of your, like, matter, or like your immaterial world, is not existing. Everything is painted in the perspective of the eternal. So it's just like a prefacing of what he's going to say, that you might think of this as contingencies, like the possible outcomes, the possible sequence of events that you can have many of. But it says that in the eternal view, this doesn't exist, because it's all clear. It's almost, one way to look at this is going to be a topic here, but like when he talks about, you can see that you might think of this more as looking back at your life history, for example. You can see everything in your life history now from today without having any influence or deciding it. And you didn't know when you were living through it how it was going to be, but now you can look back and you can say and describe how things were unfolding. So it's a little bit like the eternal perspective, even if that is, it doesn't have an end point. It could be helpful to think of it as that you can look at the totality of something, like in hindsight almost. So he continues, Nakachagida, necessità però quindi non prende se non come dal viso in che si specchia nave che per torrente giù discende. So with necessity, it does not mean in the same way, like in the same way that you can see in the reflection of a face who is looking at a boat going down a river. So he wants to say that even if I now can tell you about your future, it does not mean that this is predestined. I mean, this is part of the philosophical part here. Like, I can tell you about your future, but it doesn't mean that it is decided beforehand, but it's more like you can look at it from the divine perspective that contains all of time, and then you can describe what's going to happen. But it doesn't mean that it is decided out of necessity beforehand. And the important part of that is like, it. One of the most central things about the whole comedy is your free will, your agency, and your potential, and your responsibility of how you choose to engage with life, and how you spend your life, and the choices you make, and do you engage in the vices or the virtues, and then it describes the consequences. But it's a very insistent idea and perspective that you have agency, you have a free will, and this is partly why this is kind of underlined here, that even if I tell you the future now, don't think that you don't play a part of it yourself and your active will in it. Okay, and then da indi si come viene ad orecchia dolce armonia di organo mi viene a vista il tempo che ti si apparecchia. So this is beautiful. Now we get back to the music metaphor. This is like from there, meaning the divine mind, this point where all time is contained, it comes to me and to my ear, sweet harmonies of an organ, and it comes to me a view, an outlook of the times that are approaching you. So he's using sound and music as a way of describing how this vision of the pilgrim's future is kind of emerging and appearing in front of him. And it ties a little bit back to the opening of Mars with these two light bands in the sky, and then also the hand of the divine, which is playing on that as a harp. And then he says, qual si partio Ippolito di Atene per la spietata e perfida Novercia, tal di Fiorenza partir ti convene. So the very first thing he says is, you will leave Florence. And he makes the comparison, the reference to the myth about Hippolytus, who is the son of Theseus, and who gets accused by his stepmother. So the story here is that his stepmother falls in love with Hippolytus, and then he rejects her, and then she gets very angry, and then she falsely accuses him of trying to seduce her. And then she tells this to Theseus, who then condemns Hippolytus and throws him out of the city, and then later actually kills him. All this from then just his wicked and evil stepmother, Novercia, who is then orchestrating out of being rejected, orchestrating false accusations and leading to his death. So in this way, from Florence, leave, it will happen to you. So the same kind of injustice will happen to you, which will make you thrown into exile. Questo si vuole e questo già si cerca e tosto verrà fatto a chi ciò pensa là dove Cristo tutto di si merca. So here you have the second tercet. This is about Boniface VIII, the Pope in the year 1300, who is in many ways directly responsible for throwing Dante out into exile and throwing him out of Florence. So literally it says here, this is wanted and this is already being sought after, or trying to come through. And this will be done by the one who is thinking of this, like a key, Chopensa, which is Boniface. There where Christ all of the days is commercialized, or made kind of merchant for selling, meaning then all these practices from the church with indulgences and excommunicating people randomly and then demanding money to revoke the excommunication, which is how the church very quickly it descended into this money machine for the Pope and for the cardinals. So Dante is super explicit here, as he said he would be through the words of Cacciaguida, that this is total clarity, that you will be thrown out and this will be done. It is already planned in the year 1300 by the Pope in Rome. La colpa seguirà la parte offensa in grido, come suol, ma la vendetta fia testimonio al vero che la dispensa. So the blame of this, meaning Dante's exile, that follows, the part that is injured, will, as usual, in outcry, the blame will be put on the one who is the offended party here, the one who is subjected to the injustice, but that's the person who will be blamed for it. As usual, as he says, come suol, in modern Italian, come di solito. So he just makes this tiny little side comment that it always happens the victor is the one who is defining the public perception afterwards, and then all the blame is just piled upon the one who has been thrown out unjustly in this case. But then he counters this and says, ma la vendetta fia testimonia, but the vendetta, the revenge, will be a testimony al ver che la dispensa, to the truth which it dispenses, or which it gives out. Most likely then pointing to the specific event that Boniface, since he is the main focus of the previous tercet, he in 1302, he makes this famous or infamous bull, decree from the church, from Rome, that is called Unam Sanctam, and it says that every single human being on the planet for salvation has to be a subject of the Roman church. And then he also says, on top of that, he says that the spiritual is above the earthly, meaning then that, in effect, every single human being on the planet is under the authority of the Roman Church. So this is seen as the peak of this of the hubris of the Roman Church after the schism in 1054. So it reaches this peak in 1302 with this bull from Boniface VIII. And also in hindsight, we can see that this is really an extreme. And what happens very quickly is that the French king responds to this, because baked into that bull is the claim that Rome should govern the whole of Europe, and all the kings as well are subject to the authority of the Roman Pope. So the French king reacts to this, and then in 1303, he sends a group of soldiers, of almost assassins, down to Rome, and they capture Boniface, Bonifacio, and then they beat him, and they keep him imprisoned for a few days, maybe a week or so. But he's so badly beaten, he's in his late 60s at the point, around 70. And then a few weeks later, he just dies from these injuries. So Boniface is actually just being more or less executed by the French king very quickly after this, like in 1303. And then also in 1309, that's when the French king takes the papacy itself and moves it out of Rome, out of Italy, and puts it into Avignon in France. So this papacy of Boniface really kind of destroys the whole church and leads to his own execution as well. So in some ways, this is what Dante might primarily allude to when he says, like, this is like the revenge of these actions of Boniface is showing like the truth and is a testimony of the truth of it. Okay, and then tu lascerai ogni cosa diletta più caramente. E questo è quello strale che l'arco dello esilio pria saetta. So here you get like something very heartfelt from Dante, which is like, you will have to leave behind or abandon each and everything that gives you delight and is most dear to you. Like all the things that are dear to you, you have to leave behind. And this is the one arrow of the bow of the exile that will first hit you. So Dante, when he's asking, he says like, well, I want to know about these arrows that will come. And this is then the first arrow of the bad events that will happen in his future, seen from 1300. And then he continues, tu proverai si come sa di sale lo pane altrui, e come è duro calle lo scendere e il salir per l'altrui scale. So this is the second one. These two tercets are often seen as kind of some of the most poignant and kind of heartfelt sad ones in the whole of the comedy, because Dante is continuing here, first like saying that the exile in itself is like a horrible arrow that hits him, and then also that you will come to know, will come to learn the bitterness of other people's bread, that he had to live off other people, and how it is a hard or a heavy path to descend and to ascend of other people's stairs. Then pointing to that he had to move from house to house, and especially that it's kind of, you had to go down the stairs from one house and up the stairs into another one, and then live off it's kind of the charity, the generosity of other people. And I just want to have one little side of the comment here that Dante wrote himself about this in Convivio, about being in exile, especially the beginning. And so Dante wrote with his own words here, peregrino quasi mendicando sono andato, like a pilgrim, almost like a mendicant, which is both like a beggar or like a Franciscan type of a spiritual person who's just living off what is given by others in this kind of spiritual pursuit, like I became, Dante says. And also, veramente io sono stato legno senza vela e senza governo. Like, truly, I became a boat without a sail and without any governance, without any direction. Portato a diversi porti e fucili dal vento secco che vapora la dolorosa povertà. So, from port to port and from shore to shore, and then also moved by a dry wind that, so it's a bit ambiguous here, but that vaporized the hurt of the poverty, likely meaning that this pain was somewhat kind of alleviated by the help of others. So there's a bit of wind in his sails by people who were actually nice to him and tried to help him. But overall, it was still kind of a suffering in poverty that followed this exile for Dante. Okay, so those are like two of the kind of most, if not depressing, but kind of really kind of shows how this impacted Dante. You can also think of that Dante's writing this when he's about 50 years old, and he's now looking back, like in reality, he's looking back at events when he was about 36, 37 years old. Okay, and a few more tercets. So E quel che più ti greverà le spalle sarà la compagnia malvagia e scempia con la qual tu cadrai in questa valle. So now we are talking about in the exile, he moves to Arezzo with many of the other white Guelphs, as kind of that was a political faction. But as he says here, that what in addition will weigh on your shoulders will be the company, like malevolent and wicked company, of those who fell with you into this valley, meaning those who were exiled together with you. Che tutta ingrata, tutta matta ed empia si farà contra a te, ma poco appresso ella, non tu, n'avrà rossa la tempia. So they will all be ungrateful, all mad and all wicked towards you, but shortly afterwards they, and not you, will have the red on the temples, meaning that they will be the one in embarrassment. Which is then most likely pointing to how this group of exile people, when they got to Arezzo, they tried several times to march back onto Florence, especially in 1304, and it was a disaster, it was a total defeat, and Dante was very much against this, but he was not listened to, so that's partly what he's showing, that when he gets into exile, this company will be problematic for him. He has to go against them or reject their approach and strategies, and then very quickly afterwards, like Dante will be proven right in a sense, and that they will be the one who will be embarrassed. And then two more tercets for today. Da di sua bestiliate il suo processo farà la prova. Sì che a te fia bello averti fatta parte per te stesso. So this is just reaffirming this view of how they had chosen the wrong strategy, like of their bestiality. Their process will be the proof that for you it will be a beautiful or a great thing to have made yourself a part of your own. This is often translated in various ways, very much like Dante is becoming a party of one, for example. This is very triumphant that he is establishing his own world and his own like political philosophy and all of this. But it's in the original, it's a little bit more that he distanced himself a little bit from the rest, and he distanced himself into becoming apart from that by himself. But it's more that you could read it both ways, like fatta parte per te stesso, like made part of your own or by yourself. But in the context, it's more like he should just be happy that he actually did not join them in their ideas, strategies, and pursuits of marching against Florence when it failed so completely. And then we're going to end on a little bit of an up note here for today. After all this, this is kind of the Dante is laying out his own biography in many ways. You had like the Canto 16 is very much the biography and life of Cacciaguida, and here we get Dante as a person laying out. So there's a kind of a conjoining in these two cantos as well, with the two biographies of kind of in the same ancestry. So that's part of it. But we're going to get like a bit of a more optimism and light here, which is lo primo tuo rifugio e il primo ostello sarà la cortesia del gran Lombardo che in su la scala porta il santo uccello. So this is then your first refuge and your first lodging, dwelling after Arezzo will be the courtesy, the generosity of the great Lombard who in or up on his stair is bringing the holy bird, the sacred bird. So this means then the Scala family in Verona, and then they have like a family like signs, flag standard of a stair, and then they put the imperial eagle on the stair. and then showing like they were in like as a support for the Holy Roman Empire, which was kind of the German Empire in many ways at that time, against the Pope. So at the time, also, if this is 1303, 1304, there's a little bit more history here, but then you had Can Grande was not yet the ruler of Verona. So at this point, Dante is 39, probably 38, 39. And he comes to Verona, and Can Grande, which is the later patron of Paradiso itself, Can Grande is only 12 years old. So he's a child who then, in his like growing up childhood, for him, he sees Dante walking into his life as this like 40-year-old, like intellectual giant of a poet who's then come out of Florence. And the other way is like Dante is kind of in the middle of his life and seeing this little child of Can Grande. But the ruler at the time was then one of the other brothers, Bartolomeo. And then he was then a good ruler. So he's the one that took Dante in. He dies shortly after. And then you have 8 or 9 years, more or less, of his brother Albuino, who Dante does not like. But then later, around 1313, then you get Can Grande. So, and then at that point, Can Grande is in his early 20s. He's the ruler of Verona and the city. And then probably the relationship between Dante and Can Grande is different at that point. But Dante is still then 25 or so years older. Okay, so so that's where we're going to end this little marathon again of 15 tercets from his first exile and then until he finds his first kind of safe haven, and that which will gradually over time lead to at least partly the environment that has some support for Dante to pursue his intellectual, spiritual endeavors, enterprises, projects, and then eventually also becomes like how he writes the comedy and specifically Paradiso, which is then dedicated to Can Grande della Scala. Okay, so that's all we have for this episode. And we'd also like to just note here that this is then at verse 72 in Canto 17. So 71 technically is then the exact middle of the whole Paradiso in Dante's Divine Comedy. So at this point, we've been through exactly half of the whole of Paradiso in original medieval Italian, in Dante's own words. So this is a little bit of a milestone. It's a bit of a celebration that we actually made it this far. It's taken more or less exactly half a year, about 6 months to do this, to look at every single word. But now we come here halfway and then it's more or less kind of, we see that we're actually going to do this. Like maybe this summer, we're going to have finished the whole thing. So that's a little bit extra celebration for us here, just like noting that this day, February the 19th, this is kind of when we have gone through half of Paradiso. And then again, landing on a little bright point of Dante finding the safe haven with the Scala family in Verona. And then you have another future opening for him where he can actually do his writing. Okay, so if you follow so far, hope some of this was interesting, some input, some food for thought, and hope you're still having a great day, maybe a cup of coffee or a cup of tea. And with that, we'll be back very soon with another episode. See you then.